And joining us right now at PMP Network is Nancy Schoenberger. She is the co-author, along with Sam Kashner, of a book called Furious Love, Elizabeth Taylor, Richard Burton, and the Marriage of the Century. And for those of you who didn't live through it, you know, when you talk about Brangelina and all these different tabloid stars nowadays, there was nothing compared to Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton. This is an amazing book, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
How did you get access to the letters and things from Elizabeth Taylor?
We didn't really think that we would, because she's very well known for not working with journalists, and there have been, you know, many other biographies in the past that she really had nothing to do with. But what happened is that we were mentioning to, we were talking about this book about Elizabeth Taylor and her marriage to Burton, and we were frustrated because we didn't have her cooperation. And a young drama student overheard us and said, gee, I didn't know that Elizabeth Taylor was ever married to Tim Burton. And, you know, referring to the director of Alice in Wonderland, right, and Edward Scissorhands. And so we told that story to Dame Elizabeth, and she was shocked and kind of horrified that Richard Burton's great legacy as one of the great actors of the 20th century is being forgotten. And so she said, well, you know, let's remedy that. And she turned over and allowed us to hold in our hands and read beautiful love letters written to her by Richard Burton, and we also had access to parts of her memoir that had never been published before, you know, the unexpurgated version of the memoir that came out some years ago. And so, and she answered questions for us and was very cooperative, and we were so grateful.
Well, I think it's a fantastic book. It's really, I mean, it's not a little tiny book. It's a 500-page book.
And a lot of people mention that, but let me say that there are 100 photographs, and including some personal photographs from Elizabeth Taylor's own collection from her bedroom and from her study, and that book pictures have not been published before now. So we were delighted to have that in the letters, and many of Richard Burton's diary entries. So there's a lot of material in this book that if you are a fan of Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton, you're going to love. And even if you are too young to know their amazing story, it's a story about star-crossed lovers. It's a great love affair. It's a great love story.
It is, and I'll tell you, I didn't know a lot of the stuff. I followed this when I was a younger kid. I followed a lot of this story. But the parts that you're missing when you followed the story are all in this book, which I think is kind of cool. And if you look at it from all her marriages, his marriages, everything, and including some of the negotiations that went on for the big picture that brought them together, Cleopatra, I thought that was actually fascinating stuff here. That the way she stood up to the studio and ended up getting more than $1 million that she originally wanted, but living allowances and production schedule things.
Oh, she was amazing, and she was the first actress to earn $1 million for a part, for playing Cleopatra, and on top of that, she was, you know, paid it, you know, overages for, you know, going over the amount of time for the shooting schedule, plus living expenses, as you mentioned, and it really kind of changed the game, because up to that point, the studios had all the power, and then with this amazing move on her part, power began to accrue more to actors, and it ushered in a whole new era. It also ushered in this affair with Richard Burton, the era of paparazzi celebrity culture. And, you know, long before Brangelina and other, you know, high-profile celebrity couples, there they were sort of setting the gold standard, if you will, for this kind of celebrity coupling.
I also found it fascinating, because I had forgotten that Stephen Boyd was actually cast as Mark Antony until I read your book. And not only that, the whole story about the plane crash and who was supposed to be in it and what happened later on by that person not going on the plane, it's an amazing story.
Yes, that's a little-known fact that we discovered, actually, when we were researching another book years ago. We wrote a book about George Reeves Television's first Superman. It became one of the main sources for Hollywoodland a few years ago about his death, whether it was a suicide or a murder. And we found a little tiny clipping that said that Joseph Mankiewicz was believed to be on the plane. He was supposed to have been on the plane that took the life of Mike Todd when it crashed in the desert. And it was only his sister-in-law who had a premonition and said, don't go on that plane, Joe, that he didn't. So I always felt that there was a kind of fate. There was some reason that Elizabeth Taylor and Joe Mankiewicz, you know, knew each other and their fates were tied. He also directed her in Suddenly Last Summer, you know, one of her great roles.
And when the director of this thing was canned, she got him the job.
Yes, he was on her top list to replace Ruben Mamoulian, who was the whole production of Cleopatra was just like an elephant on steroids. It was just the whole production run amok, you know, taking too long. Different sets had to be built and disassembled. It was moved from England to Rome. Why they wanted to film in England to begin with was, you know, some weird executive decision. And actors were fired and replaced, and the whole thing was monstrous. But it was epic-making, and it, as I said, it helped to usher in, for good or for ill, you know, what we now think of as celebrity culture.
One of the things that you talk about here is her pneumonia and tracheotomy and the fact that it cost $100,000 a day to the studio for that. But what you mentioned after that was about what Elizabeth discovered from being sick, and that was all of a sudden the people who were whacking her in the head for coupling up with Eddie Fisher after her husband died and taking her away from America's Sweetheart, which you indicate really didn't really happen that way because the marriage was pretty much kaput before that. But one of the things that you talk about was how she reacted to having the power of being sick or, you know, whatever, causing an accident, having an accident, and she'd been doing that for years.
She's a woman who knows how to keep the attention on herself and how to get her own way, because she had to survive. She was a child star at the age of 10, and in order not to be destroyed by all the machinery of the studios, she had to learn how to assert herself, and if she couldn't do it by asking or demanding, the only time she would have any time off for sympathy and attention would be when she fell ill, and she's always had fragile health and has had a number of, you know, injuries and ailments, but in that particular case it did turn the tide towards her, because she was, you know, she's twice been through being roundly condemned for her behavior. First when she married Eddie Fisher, and of course he left Debbie Reynolds for her. Terrible criticism. Liz vamps Eddie. She was, you know, the fallen woman, the Jezebel, and it took her a while to recover from that. And her near death, requiring the tracheotomy, as you said, it restored her back into the good graces. And then, of course, she went through the whole thing again with Richard Burton. In fact, they, in the early months of their affair, they tried to stay away from each other, partly because she didn't want to go through that again, but their attraction was just too strong, and so she ended up seeing herself condemned by the Vatican and condemned on the House of Representatives in Washington, and so she had a lot to live down. But the tide did turn again for her, and by the time Richard Burton was appearing in Hamlet on Broadway and they kind of dashed off to Toronto to get married, they returned to Boston for the return of the play, of the run of Hamlet, and they were met with such a huge Beatlemania-sized crowd at Logan Airport that they had to use a fake limo to sneak them in into the city, and they were mobbed at their hotel in Boston, just unbelievable crowds, but these were crowds who worshipped them and who they'd forgiven them their, you know, now they were married, now they were the golden couple, and the crowds were just unbelievable.
I find it interesting in the book, you talk about Richard Burton. He was married to this woman, Sybil, for a long, long time. And he had tons and tons and tons of affairs right in her face. And at one point, he was with her, but he wouldn't give up his girlfriend, Pat Tunder. And then he was with Elizabeth at the same time. I mean, that guy was an unbelievable...
Yes, he was quite a lusty guy. And just to put it in perspective, and I'm not excusing, you know, bad behavior, but just to put it in perspective... You know, think about what we see on Mad Men today. I don't know if you watch that show, but set in the early 60s. You can see that there was a certain kind of, it was a different lifestyle. Everybody drank. Everybody smoked. People winked more at affairs. Not to say that they didn't often have devastating effects on marriages. But Richard himself grew up in a very macho, virile kind of culture of coal miners in a small town in Wales. He himself was just a very lusty guy. He was married to a devoted Welsh woman, Sybil Burton, and he just was known for having affairs with his leading ladies, but he felt he would never leave that marriage. He had two daughters with Sybil, and he really loved her in her way, in his way, but not in her way, because he couldn't be faithful to her. However, he said, I'll never leave you, but when he met Elizabeth, she was a force that no one could resist, and certainly not Richard, and then, you know, they divorced their spouses and, of course, married.
Now, they ended up getting married a couple of times, and according to your book, in Elizabeth's mind, if he had stayed, if he had remained alive, they might have been married again.
Well, what we discovered in our research, and certainly in these letters, and we weren't we didn't know this, we weren't prepared to see this, but Richard was so enthralled to her and devoted to her, and that this was truly a deep and lasting bond. And the marriage couldn't last because there were too many pressures on the marriage. Worldwide fame, lack of privacy, this unreal life they were living. And, of course, they both had issues with alcohol, particularly Richard Burton. But despite all of that, the bond was there. And, you know, when Elizabeth finally went into the Betty Ford Clinic, she was the first one of the first celebrities to do that, and she was quite forthright about her addiction to alcohol and prescription painkillers. Later on, she reflected. She said, you know, if we had known back then what we know now about alcohol addiction and codependency, I think that we may never have divorced a second time. And certainly, she, I think, in her heart, always hoped there would be a third time. And she did receive a letter from Richard that was mailed a few days before Richard died. He died suddenly at the age of 58 of a cerebral hemorrhage. She received the letter after his death, so it was as though it were a letter from beyond the grave. And it was the one letter she would not read to us or let us see because it was too private, but she did indicate its contents. And in those contents were that Richard Burton really longed to be with her and wanted to be back with her.
And
she had said recently that she felt that had Burton lived, there would have been a third try, maybe third. Three times would have been the charm.
It's amazing. I mean, one of the quotes you have in here from her says, with Richard Burton, I was living my own fabulous, passionate fantasy, which is really kind of true.
Yes, it was. And they lived large, and they made a ton of money. I think at one point, in during the they made 11 films together, and during their best years, I think they made $200 million. But to put that in perspective, they were supporting a huge entourage. They had a blended family of Elizabeth's three children, and then they adopted a girl, Maria Burton, and Richard was supporting his two daughters and trying to spend as much time as he could with the elder daughter, Kate. And then he was also supporting his extended family of brothers and sisters and their families in Wales. He was the only son of 11 children, the only young man not to go into the mines. Actually, his younger brother escaped the mines as well. And I think he always felt it was his responsibility to make sure his family lived well. So he was supporting, I think, 42 people at one point, his family back in Wales and their entourage.
Amazing.
That's a lot of people to support.
And Elizabeth, by the time she was around 29 years old, had a few children already, had been divorced a couple of times already. She had already lived.
Right. You know, when you think about it, she one of the great films that she made with Richard Burton was Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? And she gave Mike Nichols, the director, his start as a film director. He had, you know, he had been famous on Broadway as part of the comedy duo of Elaine May and Mike Nichols. He had directed three plays on Broadway to great success. But his first film was Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? And they were both in their mid to late 20s, but Elizabeth by then had been married, let's see, four times, had three children, had adopted a fourth child, and had been, you know, internationally famous, you know, from an early age. So she's always been in her own category. And I think that was another bond that Elizabeth and Richard had. No one else knew what it was like to live that incredible, unreal life.
Mm. That's true. They shared that, and they shared so many other things, and it's all in the book here. It's called Furious Love, Elizabeth Taylor, Richard Burton, and the Marriage of the Century, from Sam Cashner and my guest today, Nancy Schoenberger. And again, it can be purchased all over the place, online, at Amazon.com. It's from Harper Books, so you can find it anywhere. Great book, and I'll tell you,
so
it's a lot of good reading. And right now, it's a perfect beach book.
Oh, Wonderful. I'm so glad you liked it. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for coming on.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.